Okay. So how's prison?
Nobody likes cops in here, so I had to earn their respect by starting a bunch of riots. Got thrown in solitary for a week. What's going on with your face?
I hate seeing you like this, so I'm flexing my eyes real hard to keep from crying. It's okay. We can still have a normal conversation. So, how's the food?
Pay no attention to him, Rosa. He's very emotional, Rosa.
Why are you saying my first name?
Well, Rosa, I read an article in the medical journal that said one destabilizing aspect of the incarceration is the constant dehumanization, Rosa. You need to be reminded that you're more than just a number, Rosa. You are Rosa. Rosa?
Yep, that fixes prison.
Is there anything we can do to help you? Anything you need done on the outside?
No, I'm good.
It's not a problem.
Rosa.
We're here for you.
Rosa.
Whatever you need.
Rosa.
Okay, I'll come up with a list.
Are listening to WREK Atlanta, and this is Lost in the Stacks, the Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show. I am Charlie Bennett in the studio with Emmy Decker, Fred Rasko, and back in action, Wendy Hagenmeyer. Each week on Lost in the Stacks, we pick a theme and then use it to create a mix of music and library talk. Whichever you're here for, we hope you dig it.
Our show today is called The Common Good, and it's about the organization called Common Good Atlanta.
And Common Good Atlanta.
Emmy, I'm going to apologize. The AB button has foiled me again. Hit it.
Common Good Atlanta has a mission to provide incarcerated people with higher education to develop an understanding of the societal forces at work all around them.
It's named Common Good because, as their website points out, democratic access to education strengthens the common good of communities.
Today, we're going to be talking to the co-directors of Common Good to find out how they fulfill that mission. And since access to education requires access to information, you just know we're going to be talking to a librarian volunteer, too.
Yes. If you, our listeners, want to join this conversation, the hashtag for the show is LITS390 for Lost in the Stacks, episode 390. Feel free to tweet your thoughts, questions, or favorite prison narratives with that hashtag.
And our songs today are about what the incarcerated learn, what the incarcerated feel, and change on an institutional and individual level. Education is a common good and should not be restricted from any population. That's the message of Common Good Atlanta, and they want to tell everyone about it. So let's kick off with Go Tell Everybody by the Rocketeens right here on Lost in the Stacks.
That was Go Tell Everybody by the Rocketeens right here on Lost in the Stacks. Our guests today are Dr. Sarah Higginbotham, a modern literature professor at Oxford College of Emory, but also a lot more than that. She founded Common Good Atlanta in 2008 and is now the co-director. Also here is co-director of Common Good with the organization since 2010, Bill Taft. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Good to be here.
By the way, did we get those introductions right? Did we leave out anything of your title, any in your titles? Or?
Well, I know that Professor Higginbotham has a history with, I think, every single school that you can go to in
Atlanta.
The
only thing that was missing from my intro is it's actually early modern literature, which is 16th and 17th century, as opposed to modern literature. So, yeah.
Oh,
so sorry. Shakespeare, Milton, John Donne, yeah.
Sorry about that.
The early moderns, Fred.
Gotcha.
The early moderns. Also in the studio is one of the volunteers for Common Good, who happens to be the humanities and science fiction librarian right here at Georgia Tech. Welcome back to the show, Karen.
Thank you. It is good to be here again.
Do you want to make an announcement about what today means to you?
Today is my fifth appearance on Lost in the Stacks, which was first in 2010 when I was a library school student in the long-lost library school episode of Lost in the Stacks in its first year, and I am pleased to announce my retirement after five appearances on this radio show, which
she
have all been
saying
a lot of
retirement.
Fun.
I don't know what's happening.
Maybe she wants like a medallion or something.
Yeah, if you come back,
I was holding out for a watch.
If you come back three more times, you get a punch card, you get an ice cream cone. All right, Fred, take it away.
Okay, well, thanks for being here, everybody. And we want to talk about Common Good Atlanta, so let's just go ahead and get the introduction to it. what is Common Good? What is it that you do with Common Good?
Common Good Atlanta is a nonprofit organization. It is completely made up of volunteers, so we have no paid staff. But we have about 50 faculty from 6 universities local in Atlanta and also University of Georgia and Clemson who are teaching college classes in 3 prisons around the state.
And what kind of courses are you teaching?
Well, we have a variety of programs. We offer college classes in the prison space. We also have an alumni network, and we have a college completion program set up for men and women who are released from prison. In the prison space, we offer liberal arts classes, and I think today the men at Phillips State Prison took a math class.
Do you have dedicated places in the prison for these classes, or are you coming in and teaching in the same place that other classes go on?
In the early days, starting in 2008, I actually taught in the visitation room, which is a large gym that has some subdivision of movable walls, also had a lot of floor waxing machines going on. So I might be teaching Homer's Odyssey while floor waxing was happening. Now, Phillips State Prison has moved us into an education building. We're the college class in that building, but there are also people who are incarcerated taking classes to earn their GED.
So I want to get into that more later, but first I want to find out how you guys got involved. How did you decide to start this or get involved with prison education?
I think for me, it started in 2008 when I was a PhD student in early modern literature at Georgia State University. And when you get a PhD in something like that field, 150 years through the 1500s and 1600s, the beauty, the wisdom, and the philosophy that I was seeped in at that time, I think it's impossible not to feel or recognize a shared responsibility to your community. So we've long in this country thought about higher education as an elitist and somewhat segregated concept, and I think those walls are crumbling. I think they've been crumbling and need to crumble. And so for me, it was just going to be one semester as a way of making sure that my doctoral work was grounded in the real world. And one semester turned into 2, which turned into 5, which turned into 20. And 2 years into it, I met my friend and colleague, Bill. And then together, we have developed the program over the last 10 years.
Bill, did you come to it the same way? Is that how your paths crossed?
No, I saw a presentation Sarah gave at Georgia State University. We were both in graduate school at the time, and I was getting my MFA in creative writing fiction, and I saw her presentation and stuck around and introduced myself and told her I would really like to help. And since then, I've learned a lot about college and prison programs. Really, before that moment, before Sarah's presentation, there was a lot I didn't know. So I've learned a lot since that time.
Are you guys bringing this up just by your own bootstraps, your own gumption, or are you having to like go out and scramble for grants, or is there any state funding support? How is this supported?
One thing that we need to really start doing is seeking more support. I think that both Bill and I have enjoyed and appreciated being a grassroots movement. Because of that, we have really quality, deep programming, immense success in the classroom, because we expect a lot of our students, but we also give them a lot of resources. And I'm sure Karen will address some of what we've done to help them research. But one thing we haven't done is actually try to publicize the program or get any money for it. So it's been very, just the faculty lead it.
Is this all volunteer time, volunteer materials? There's no money in it, and so it's a very cheap operation? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a free operation, basically. Although we now pay tuition to Georgia State University, our nonprofit. Common Good Atlanta pays Georgia State University tuition for the incarcerated students at Phillips State Prison. And in exchange for that, they are now getting a transcript. We still provide the faculty, we provide the books, and we provide the learning support for them. And in exchange for that, they now have accredited classes that they will be able to transfer when they get out.
And volunteers are very important. I don't think without volunteers you can teach the men and women the skills they need or give them the support they need. You can't walk into a prison classroom and just start a college class. You have to be ready to celebrate all the skills, the unique skills each student has, and you need volunteers who can work as tutors who can help those students develop those unique skills in the college classroom setting. If you without volunteers, you can't get the job done.
We'll be back with more about Common Good Atlanta after a music set.
You can file this set under HV8875.Y37.
We are speaking today to Sarah Higginbotham, Bill Taft, and Karen Byers about Common Good Atlanta and their mission to bring higher education to those who are imprisoned here in the Atlanta area. So can you just sort of paint the scene for us? What is it actually like to enter a prison and stand in front of a group of incarcerated men or women and teach them a subject?
Entering the prison is a little bit like going through airport security. You take off your shoes, you take off your belt, you step through a metal detector, all your materials go through a scanner. You go through a sally port, which is where you go through a large door, it closes, you wait till another one opens. You do that twice. You walk across the yard of the prison and down into the education building through two more gates. But once you're actually in that space, in that classroom, and sitting with the students, there's just almost no way for a teacher to say what an incredibly wonderful and rich and profound teaching experience it is. You're meeting with people who have higher levels of trauma, they've been exiled, they've been dehumanized, and when we sit down with a text or a topic of discussion, this is a time when they can reclaim their humanity. And so the material means a lot. And of all the distractions going through, once you're in the classroom, there are no distractions. There are no cell phones in the lap. There's just the people around the table, just the human beings and the text discussing it. It's a wonderful teaching experience.
And the students are always engaged. They're always focused on the discussion, and they want to critique the text, whatever the text is, whatever the concept or idea is. They want to deconstruct it, analyze it, and approach it from a variety of perspectives. So I'm always struck by how I've given up trying to be totally prepared for the classroom because so many good, unexpected things will happen. I've since decided I should go into the classroom prepared but ready to forget all my preparation because the class will go in its own unique, great direction.
Are the students all prepared for these classes, like, and not the actual knowledge, but to be taught, sort of the meta cognition? Do they know what they're getting into? And are they all like volunteers themselves or self-selected?
They are self-selected. In fact, we have a long waiting list of students who would like to be part of the college program at these facilities. Are they prepared? They're not prepared in the classical sense where they come, perhaps like Georgia Tech students or Emory students, where they come having had access to a quality education. Many of them, and this is across the board in the United States, people who are incarcerated tend to be miseducated, undereducated, but they come with the only thing that really matters, and that is deep intellectual curiosity. The stuff we talk about matters to them, whether it's Greek tragedy, or whether it's neuroscience, which they took last summer from an Emory neuroscientist. It doesn't matter what the material is on the table, algebra, philosophy, art, literature, it applies to their lives. And that's the ideal teaching situation.
Do you get to connect to them in the same way that you get to connect to students who are enrolled in college? That almost social learning style, is that at all possible in prison?
It's more so, I think. There's not an exchange of much personal information. But because you are both so, both yourself as the teacher, this is material that you care about, and because the students care so deeply, you're both involved in this mutual process of challenging the text, challenging each other, figuring out the meaning, applying it to yesterday when I was teaching at the prison, they were applying Milton's Paradise Lost to Machiavelli. Then someone brought in Foucault, and then another student brings in Dostoevsky. And so they have, I think, a way of, we have ways of connecting that you might think, well, we don't share public, we don't share media with each other, but we share the world of ideas.
I'm guessing you don't get like the social media, or you can't connect with them that way. Or, I mean, in high school, you know, you can stay after school and talk to the teacher to get some extra help. In a university, there's office hours. Is there like a outside of the classroom environment connection?
No, but we do have office hours. We had an accredited history class taught by Dr. Robert Woodrum from Perimeter College this spring, and he went out. He couldn't have office hours once a week, but he was able to go once a month and set up in the library, and he was ready to meet with any students who wanted to meet with him. So that's, I think, an important component of our classroom approach.
Are you monitored? Are you surveilled? Well, I mean, thinking about an office hour, talking to anybody who wants to talk to you, that seems to imply a lot more freedom than I imagine, freedom of movement than I imagine in a prison.
Well, the office was in the library. So it's an office in a public space, a workspace. So in that sense, it's an office within a community space.
And how much does like administrative services in the prison affect what you do or stop? Have they ever said you can't teach that? Or some version of that.
In 10 years, no one in the Department of Corrections has ever said, you cannot teach that. Bill and I work really closely with the Department of Corrections at every level, from the officers who let us through the gates to the deputy wardens and the warden and the administrators in the central part of the state. And they are a hospitable environment for college and prison, contrary to what some people might think. We are welcomed there. We're treated with respect. And Bill and I work hard to show that same respect to the prison authorities because they're the ones letting us in. So the prison is panoptic in that you can see everything that's happening, but there are no officers, there are no administrators in the classroom when we're teaching.
Now, Dr. Caroline Young is teaching a creative writing poetry class at Whitworth Women's Facility. She has invited staff to the class, but staff have declined the invitation, and that's not uncommon when the subject is poetry writing. Initially, any student, as we have found, is a little reluctant to embrace poetry writing. We have found it takes about 3 or 4 classes with a poetry writing teacher for the students to realize they can make poetry do what they want it to do.
Well, you know, it's hard to trust a poet.
And so, but we're hoping one day that the staff are always welcome to take the poetry writing class.
Our guests today are Sarah Higginbotham and Bill Taff, co-directors of Common Good Atlanta, as well as Karen Viers, our librarian and volunteer instructor for Common Good Atlanta. We'll talk more about educational outreach to the prison population on the left side of the hour.
You're listening to Lost in the Stacks on WREK Atlanta.
You believe in WREK?
I believe in WREK.
Our show today is about The Common Good, an organization that does educational outreach initiatives for prisoners. Talking about the prison system inevitably leads to asking questions about ourselves as a society. Consider the experience of the actually incarcerated. Literature is filled with autobiographical accounts of prison life that grapple with the cause and effects of organized incarceration. We'll go into the mid-show break with just one brief example from Soledad Brother, The Prison Letters of George Jackson. This is Jackson writing in April 1970, Reckoning with Racism in Prison. There are some changes that could be made right now that would alleviate some of the pressures inside this and other prisons. but to get at the causes, you know, one would be forced to deal with questions at the very center of American political and economic life. And I should mention, this is Charlie, America is spelled with a K. At the core of the American historical experience. This prison didn't come to exist where it does just by happenstance. Those who inhabit it and feed off its existence are historical products. File this set under PS3500.A1S3.
Branded man out in the cold.
Branded Man by Merle Haggard and the Strangers. Before that, Female Prison by Loretta Lynn. Those are songs about the men and women in prison and how prison stays with them even when they're out.
We're back with Sarah Higginbotham, Bill Taft, and Karen Viers talking about Common Good Atlanta, which is a nonprofit higher educational outreach initiative, say that three times fast, to the Atlanta area prison population. Karen, you're
yes.
on. So why a librarian and why prison?
So I was interested in this, and if you look back a couple of years, the previous institution I was at did a book club for the entire school, and we had Picking Cotton, which was a story about a mistaken identity in the American prison system. And I think that's what kind of piqued my interest. And then I heard about Common Good through the Britton Fellows, which that's a program here at Georgia Tech with postgraduate fellows who are teaching English 1101 and 1102, many of whom are involved in this program, one of whom mentioned it to me. And I was like, tell me more about this. So that's how I got to talking with Sarah and with Bill. And I taught my first class in the men's prison this past spring. So that was the process of getting here.
Can you talk about that first class? Like, what did you expect and what did it turn out to be?
I didn't really know what to expect. I'm fortunate to say prison has not been a big part of my life experience so far, and I plan to keep it that way. So, you know, there's what's on TV, but I didn't know how what we saw would line up with that. So Sarah's already described the process of getting in, and the process of getting out is just the whole thing in reverse. But actually being there was very rewarding as an instructor. People say, you know, in college you can take whatever you want, and that's true to a point. If you want to graduate with a degree, you have to sometimes take things you don't want, or at times you don't want. So what that means is that you've got people who have really chosen to be in this classroom, have chosen to participate in this this program, and they're the most dedicated students I've had in some ways. It's been a really unique experience to see their point of view. They're also largely older than a traditional age college student, so you've got people who are also bringing more life experience into the conversation.
Does the student engagement make up for the reduction in resources?
I would love to see the student engagement and the with the same amount of resources. So, but the student engagement is really unique.
So you're, in addition to being a volunteer instructor, you're a research librarian here at Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of access to research resources do they have? I'm assuming it's much more limited, and how do they get around those limitations?
So teaching in a prison as a librarian is like being a librarian before the internet, which was a new thing for me because I started library school in 2007, which means the internet was always part of what we were doing. So that meant for me, if I wanted to talk about an article, and in fact, I wanted to talk about two articles, that meant making photocopies and bringing them in with me. And then handing them out and making sure everyone had a copy. And it was very different than saying, okay, we're going to look at this, click on this link. So it was a change in teaching styles, but it was also making sure that I brought the resources with me instead of the resources being broadly available and people could just access them.
So they don't have access to any electronic resource at all?
My understanding is that there's no internet, and that cuts out a huge amount of electronic resources. I mean, things on CD-ROM, but I mean, that technology is not as widely available as it used to be.
Are you allowed to leave paper with them, like these handouts
yes.
and printed stuff?
Yes. So, for example, in this class, I wanted to talk about scholarship as a conversation, which is one of the ACRL frames. So what we were doing was looking at one article about the character of Gertrude in Hamlet. And as it turns out, they had read Hamlet, which was great. And for the few who hadn't, the other students were really involved in explaining to them, oh, here's the whole situation. And Hamlet, he has some like mom issues. And so one article was saying Gertrude is a strong character who is undervalued by the play and by critics. And the other article directly addressed the first one and said, well, that may be what you want to think, and actually addressed the author by name. However, all of the evidence says, and so it was a really good example in that particular scholarship to say, you know, people don't just write articles kind of out of nowhere. They're part of an ongoing discussion. And so the reason that you need to do research is so that when you have an opinion about something, it's not like bursting into the middle of a conversation and being like, I have thoughts. I want to share them. So that helped provide the context for the work that they're doing.
Has it changed your teaching at all to teach this class?
It's given me a lot to think about in terms of how to work around that no internet element. But I would say that a lot of what I do already crosses over. So in that respect, not as much.
So I think this is a question not just for you, Karen. I think this is for all three of you. What is the outcome? Teaching a class, teaching a whole curriculum of classes, the whole educational program. Anyone who wants to weigh in, Karen, Sarah, Bill.
Yeah, I think there are really two outcomes, two branches of outcomes. And one is the one that will be discussed in the state legislature or in policy discussions, and that's the instrumental good. The recidivism rate in the United States hovers near 70%. 7 out of every 10 people who are released from prison will commit another crime within 5 years. That's way higher than any other country and also just too high. There are historical reasons for that and structural injustices that are part of that. But what we do know about college and prison is that it dramatically lowers that. And national studies have shown that getting a degree, a higher education degree while you're in college, can lower it to below 13%. So that's a dramatic shift. The Department of Justice says that every dollar spent on education in prison saves budgets $5. But that's the instrumental good. I think there's an inherent good, too. And that is that when people have access to education, to literature and ideas and science, they become more empathetic, they become educated, they become empowered to critique the structural injustices around them instead of being caught up in them. And so our core value is about human dignity.
In other words, the common good. Our guests today were Sarah Higginbotham and Bill Taft, co-directors of Common Good Atlanta, and Karen Viers. She's Georgia Tech librarian and a Common Good volunteer instructor. Thank you all for being on the show.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
You can file this set under HV9647.H34.
If I Should Fall from Grace with God by the Pogues, Orphan Girl by Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings, and New Day Rising by Husker Du.
Husker Du.
Husker Du. Songs about reflecting on a circumstance and working to bring positive change. You know this isn't my genre of music.
Today's show was about the common good. Let's wrap up by revisiting the core beliefs of the Common Good program as found on commongoodatlanta.com.
Broad democratic access to higher education strengthens the common good of communities.
A college education helps people develop a deeper understanding of both themselves and the societal forces at work around them.
Communities are weakened when access to higher education is restricted on the basis of wealth, privilege, or class.
Higher education can restore dignity and reconnect people to their own humanity, allowing incarcerated people to transform their influence on society from negative to positive. And with that, let's roll the credits. Lost in the Stacks is a collaboration between WREK Atlanta and the Georgia Tech Library. Produced by Amit Doshi, Charlie Bennett, that's me, Wendy Hagenmeyer, Fred Rasko, and Emmy Decker.
Charlie was our engineer today, and the show was brought to you in part by Live at Rec, the live music show on this very station, hosting artists like Trash Can, Dennis Frank, and Waiting for UFOs in coming weeks this summer. You can find out more at wrek.org/live.
Legal counsel and vinyl copies of Johnny Cash's San Quentin album.
Ooh, I want one of those.
Were provided by the Burris Intellectual Property Law Group in Atlanta, Georgia.
Special thanks to Sarah, Bill, and Karen for being on the show. Thanks to Susan Parham for the show idea. And thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for listening.
Find us online at lostinthestacks.org, and you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and plenty of other places we don't know about.
Next week on Lost in the Stacks, we'll be learning how to read a book. I think I've been doing it wrong all this time.
Time for our last song today. And whenever we have a guest on the show that's in a band, we like to work in one of their own tracks into the rotation. Bill Taft has been in several Atlanta bands through the years, and his current project is called Waiting for UFOs. And the specific track we're going to play is especially appropriate for today's show, because it brings to mind the words of one of history's famous prisoners, Oscar Wilde, who wrote, "We're all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars." This is Starlight by Waiting for UFOs right here on Lost in the Stacks. Have a great weekend, everybody.